Hello and welcome to this latest and enthralling, I wasn't sure what I was going to say there, we'll go with enthralling episode of Cooper Talks, that's optimism there, and carrying on with the Cold War series, I'm going to be looking at this one, well we'll call this one the Second Cold War, so really most of the 1980s, up until, spoilers, 1989, when the Cold War actually ends. Now, depending on how this goes and how long it is, I might do this as one episode or I might do it as two episodes. And I'll explain that as we go through. So we'll see how it goes. But basically, we're looking at the 1980s and how after Afghanistan, the Soviet invasion of Afghanistan and the end of detente, we kind of get a resumption of hostilities between the USA and USSR. So during the 1970s, kind of the 60s as well, but mainly the 70s, under detente, it was kind of live and let live. You know, you do your thing, we'll do our thing. There might be proxy wars that we'll support, but the actual USA and USSR kind of agree to get along and sort of rub shoulders. And there's obviously things like SALT One and the space station link up and trying to sort of coexist mutually. But with the end of detente after the Soviet invasion of Afghanistan and the election of Ronald Reagan in America, things change and become much more confrontational between the two major powers. And so that's why this period in the 1980s is sometimes called the Second Cold War. Now, the two things are kind of going along at the same time. But I'm going to look at them independently of each other. So I'm going to start with Ronald Reagan in America because he was elected in November 1980, becomes president in January 1981, as they always do. And unlike Jimmy Carter, who was all about let's try and work together and come up with a solution, apart from the Carter Doctrine, Ronald Reagan takes a much tougher line. Now, politically speaking, Ronald Reagan is, we call him the new right. He's sort of a new kind of figure, someone from a very conservative figure in that sort of sense, although by no means as conservative as conservatives today. And we're not going to look at Reagan's domestic policy and agenda, but kind of Reagan's main attitude was he looked at America in the 1970s, the humiliation of the Vietnam War, the sort of problems America had with its economy, the kind of trying to get along with the USSR, and he felt that America being humiliated, being humbled, and he really wanted to restore pride in America. I'm almost hesitant to say it, but essentially he wanted to make America great again. Oh dear, I can't imagine anyone else using that statement. But he really wants to restore that pride and enthusiasm in America and kind of restore that glory. And part of that is saying, no. We were humiliated by Vietnam and everything else. We look like the world suckers. We're going to get back to being the world's policeman, going to be tough internationally. We're going to be a side that everyone's going to fear and respect. Now, there are obviously good and bad points to this, and here is not the place to analyse these, but he is much less worried about human rights. Doesn't mean he doesn't care about them, but he's much less worried about international human rights and much more focused on American defense spending. Now, you can look at this in one of two ways. Either Ronald Reagan wanted to increase defense spending because he was a hawk and he really wanted to take it to the USSR and put pressure on them. But it's also worth bearing in mind, Ronald Reagan genuinely had an awful fear of nuclear war. And whereas previous presidents had had a fear of nuclear war, so their answer was to try and go with the mad theory and try and set it up so that no nuclear war could happen, Reagan is just as scared, if not more so, of nuclear war, really wants to avoid it. And his answer is actually what we need to do to remove the threat is make America so incredibly strong and powerful that there's no way anyone could launch a nuclear bomb against us and attack us from an American point of view. So he'll come up with these initiatives. And I think, you know, don't dismiss him as just a hawk or someone who's super aggressive. He basically wants to raise America to the position it had held in the 1950s, where it was kind of this colossus on the world stage. He wanted to get it back there, and particularly after World War II, that sort of Truman into Eisenhower era of American greatness, and restore the pride. And something we haven't talked about, but yeah, watch the film Argo if you're interested, which is sort of loosely true, except it's Canadians. Anyway, but there's an Iranian hostage crisis. So this and the Vietnam War have been humiliating for America. And at the time, the Soviet Union had been gaining prestige in Africa and Central America, gaining supporters and allies there at a time when America was on the downhill. So the Soviet Union was on the up globally. America was on the way down. And he said, no. Reagan was, nope. We need to fix this. We're going to fight communism. And that's one of his key things. We're going to fight communism, almost rejecting the Truman Doctrine, you might say, because he's almost saying, no, there's a Cold War and we're going to win it. So none of this, we're going to contain it, we're going to win it. That was very much his attitude. Actually, I've got a quote on that. So this is a quote from Ronald Reagan during his presidency, the first few years. He says, here's my strategy on the Cold War. We win, they lose. Okay, this is not someone who's going to accommodate. And then his other attitude, this is the other good quote. Communism works only in heaven, where they don't need it, and in hell, where they've already got it. Again, this is sort of rhetoric that plays out well on the TV and the media, but it is quite confrontational, as we can see. So he wanted to take the Soviet Union on, and therefore he's going to introduce much more aggressive military policies. Okay. Now, Reagan was aware that the Soviet Union had been able to build up quite an important arsenal of weapons, and actually, in some ways, had more weapons than America, although Americans' weapons were much more sophisticated, much more powerful. And he said, no, we're not going to be intimidated by this. I'm going to take it on. So he announced a huge program that would take place between 1981 and 1987 while he was president, and it would cost more than $1 trillion. Now, $1 trillion is a lot now. It was even more at the start of the 1980s. It was a huge amount of money. And this would include, I'm just going to go through these. Don't worry too much about what these are, but basically these are all really top-notch weapons in the 1980s and very expensive. So he says, we're going to have 100 MX missiles, 100 B-1 long-range and supersonic bombers, so faster than the speed of sound. A new stealth bomber that would be invisible to radar, so that would give America the advantage over the Soviet Union, because you wouldn't know the planes coming to deliver the weapons until too late. And that's that weird kind of funny angled sort of black stealth bomber you may have seen. The construction of 6 Trident nuclear submarines. So brand new nuclear submarines. This was cutting edge, that would be able to launch nuclear weapons from anywhere. Very expensive and very powerful. Improving all American military communications, particularly introducing computer technology, and developing something called the neutron bomb. And this weapon, the kind of thing with the neutron bomb, so whereas the nuclear bombs, fission and fusion, basically destroyed absolutely everything in their path, the idea of the neutron bomb was that it would destroy living things, but it would leave buildings intact. So again, we don't have the technology for that today, but the idea was to threaten, say, hey, we can have this bomb that actually we just destroy all living things, all the people and animals and so on. I mean, obviously they were mostly focused on the people, but we're going to destroy all of those, but then we can just take over your city. Okay, so it's not like it's causing long-term problems for us. So that was the idea behind it. I say the technology wasn't there, but he's announcing investment to develop this and plowing huge resources that America could afford into the development of new weapons and technology. Now, he also decided that he was going to become more confrontational in Europe. So his argument was the Soviets had already deployed a number of missiles in the western part of the Soviet Union. Now, do bear in mind, I mean, that's kind of Belarus, the Baltic states, and Ukraine today. But that was part of the USSR. It was its own country. But because the Soviet Union had put its missiles there, the USA said, okay, we're going to put our new cruise missiles. And the cruise missiles were important because they, like the stealth bomber, could not be detected by radar. So you wouldn't know they're coming. This undermines the whole MAD theory. So the MAD theory being that, okay, we can't stop you launching the weapons, but thanks to radar and satellite technology, we'd have 15 minutes warning from when they started being launched to when they arrived in America. 15 minutes is more than enough time for us to press our button. But if the if they're not detectable by radar, then that's gone, and that basically removes the whole mutually assured destruction argument. So Reagan is putting these really threatening cruise missiles in Western Europe, okay, with its NATO allies. So they ended up putting them in the UK, Belgium and the Netherlands, West Germany, and Italy as well. So this is a marked aggression there in response to the Soviet putting them in the western part of the Soviet Union, but still in the Soviet Union. All of this, unsurprisingly, really upsets and angers and worries the Soviet Union. And so superpower relations get a lot worse during this time period. What Reagan was after was that he felt they could win a limited nuclear war. Obviously, if there was a big global nuclear war and everything went off, then the world would be destroyed and no one wins. But he reckoned if they came up with the right strategy, the Soviet Union would be destroyed, but America might come out of it okay. Okay, so they'd be damaged, but it wouldn't be too bad. And they call this the nuclear utilization target selection, or NUTS, because it was, against the Soviet Union. And that all meant they targeting all the key cities and sites. So it wasn't just going for mass destruction, but basically to destroy very quickly the Soviet Union, thanks to cruise missiles and so on, before the Soviet Union could do too much damage to the USA and her allies. Or mainly the USA, they weren't so worried about the allies. Again, this increases tension because, thanks to the 1950s, 60s, and then the period of detente, both sides had accepted MAD. You know, so, okay, you can destroy us, we can destroy you, let's not do anything. Now the Americans are saying, actually, we've got a plan where we can destroy you and we'll come out of it okay. So basically, we can win this and you can't. Which is going to be much more confrontational. And the Soviet Union is going to be put under pressure to respond to this. Now, Reagan was prepared to discuss arms limitations, but he always wanted to approach them from a position of strength. And he knew that America would have the advantages because, although they didn't know how bad it was, he knew that the Soviet Union economically was struggling, that the only way it could maintain a strong military presence was by cutting the standard of living at home, basically sacrificing the quality of life of its people for military power. And that had been part of the whole thing with detente, scale back the arms limitations and so on to save the Soviet Union money, save the Americans money as well. Reagan saying, no, forget the Cold, we can afford this, they can't. So he wants to come from a position of strength saying, hey, we can afford all these advanced fancy new things. He knew the Soviet Union couldn't match America economically. No one was really prepared for how far they couldn't match, but that's for another time. So he wanted to come from a position of strength, and in November 1981 he proposed quite a controversial zero option, and he said, okay, I'm going to cancel deployment of new US intermediate range missiles in Western Europe if the Soviet Union agrees to dismantle comparable forces. So that's 600 of its SS-20 missiles. Now, Brezhnev, who was still just about the leader at the time, he said, no way. No way are we going to do that. OK, why would we give up our advantage and our protection? And some historians think that Reagan did that because he knew Brezhnev was never going to accept that kind of, bilateral reduction of arms, sort of measure for measure, and basically both saying neither of us will have these nuclear weapons. So Reagan's playing it. He's one of those things. He's made the offer because he knew it'd be rejected, and then he looks like the good guy. So he says, hey, I offered to get rid of nuclear weapons, but Brezhnev said no, so, you know, it's not on me. But the idea being that Reagan only did that because he knew there was no way Brezhnev was going to agree to it. It's like making a ridiculous demand that you know they won't accept, so that you can turn around and say, okay, I'll give up on that demand. Oh, well, I've made a concession now. So Reagan's playing the game here. We don't know that for definite. Reagan will also go further, and actually in a speech in the House of Commons in Britain, And Reagan was a very close ally of Margaret Thatcher during the 80s as well. He actually made a speech where he described the Soviet Union as an evil empire. And again, this is pretty much a sign that detente is over. Okay, this is not someone who's looking to conciliate and work with the Soviet Union. Now, as it happens, and I'll talk about this another time, the Soviet Union will go through quite a rapid change of leaders for various reasons. So Brezhnev dies in 81. He's replaced by a guy called Yuri Andropov. Andropov will die quite quickly as well. But Andropov, as this new leader in the Soviet Union in 1982, he called Reagan. He said, he's insane and a liar as well. So again, very aggressive, very confrontational. And it basically echoes kind of the early years of the Cold War, kind of back to the 1940s and that confrontation between Truman and Stalin almost. That led to the Soviet Union basically comparing Reagan to Hitler and to as fascism and trying to threaten the Soviet Union. It just all gets a lot more dangerous. Now, beyond all of that, one of the, I'm going to call it a fun thing. It's not a fun thing at all. One of the things that happens is Reagan comes up with something called, now I'm going to make sure I say this right, something called the Strategic Defense Initiative, SDI. If you know, you know. The Strategic Defense Initiative. Now, he did want to reduce arms and he did give the names, gave the name Strategic Arms Reduction Talks. So rather than Strategic Arms Imitation Talks, he rebrands it Strategic Arms Reduction Talks, or START, and he proposes some meetings so that they can start talking about that. And this was then complicated by what happened in Poland during Solidarity. Now, I talked about this in a previous podcast, but the USA decided to give secret assistance to the to Solidarity movement in Poland, even when its leaders were banned and imprisoned. And the USA publicly comes to Solidarity's aid, which is very different from Hungary and the Prague Spring, and criticised Brezhnev and then Andropov for the heavy-handed approach and the way they reacted to it. And then they banned all trade in high-tech trade with the Soviet Union. And that was important as well. So they had kind of been cooperating on the space station and sharing advances in computer technology. But they used Solidarity as a reason for saying, no, we're not going to share any of our computer technology with you. And America was way, way ahead in terms of computing power of the Soviet Union. So without American technology coming in, that was going to be a big disadvantage to the Soviet Union, not just in military terms, but in many other terms. Okay. Things get even worse because then in 1983, the Soviet delegation says, we've had enough of the START talks. We're going to leave those. And Reagan says, well, don't worry about that. We don't need START. We're going to have our Strategic Defense Initiative, which will become nicknamed Star Wars, and I'll explain why. Now, how is the SDI going to work? First of all, we do not have the technology today, I'm doing this in 2023, we don't have the technology in the world today to be able to do this. And it's a classic sort of Reagan move. He makes this big statement saying, here's an idea, here's what we're going to do. I'm going to plough a load of money in to develop this defense initiative. And what we'll have is we'll have a load of satellites, okay, up in the atmosphere, around America, if you like. And these satellites will detect an incoming nuclear missile. And that satellite will send a signal to a ground-based laser, based somewhere in America. Okay, that laser will then send its laser beam up to a relay mirror, which is in a geosynchronous orbit, so it's locked in position above America, above the USA. That would reflect out, concentrating, if you like, this laser beam that would hit a battle mirror in a low fast orbit, so whizzing around across America. And by that time, the reflection of the laser beam would be able to destroy the nuclear weapon. So effectively, It's like saying we're going to have a bunch of satellites of America monitoring, and then we're going to fire lasers to shoot invading nuclear weapons out of the sky. You can see why it was nicknamed Star Wars, because it's kind of like space and lasers being fired out. We can't do that today. We don't have the technology. This is straight out of a James Bond or a spy movie or some kind of crazy 1980s idea. But it was important. And the reason it was important was because, effectively, that is saying America will be defended. There will be no way that the Soviet Union would be able to attack them if SDI gets put into force. And that would mean... that would mean MAD, the mutually assured destruction theory, doesn't play a role, because America would be safe with the potential to destroy the Soviet Union, but the Soviet Union wouldn't be able to take advantage of America. So America would basically be back where it was in the wake of World War II, the dominant force in the world and utterly protected. And the Soviet Union was really alarmed about that, and really alarmed. Now, we don't know if it was Reagan's intention or not, probably not, but it was maybe just a nice idea. But by saying he's going to invest in it and making it seem like it's about to happen, it panicked the USSR and it triggered a whole series of events that will basically lead to the ending of the Cold War. Now, Andropov in the Soviet Union, he accused the USA of preparing for a first strike on the Soviet Union, that they were trying to be more aggressive. And basically trying to unleash nuclear terror in the best way, in the hope of winning it. Maybe he was. And basically, he saw it for what it was, that the Soviet Union would be at a disadvantage if SDI comes on. Now, the US Congress, because the American public loved this idea, I mean, who wouldn't? It would eradicate the threat of nuclear Armageddon in America. So the US Congress voted in favour of the funds for the development of it. Like I say, just because you put funds in and develop it doesn't mean it's going to happen straight away. You know, people are investing in, Elon Musk is trying to invest in getting a manned mission to Mars. Now, just because he's plowing a lot of money in doesn't mean it's going to happen in the next 2 years. You know, it may not happen for a century or something like that. Who knows? But it was a big threat. And Andropov and the Soviet Union felt they had to take this seriously. And that meant they would have to start spending huge amounts of money on armaments and developing new computer technology to try and compete with the USA. Unfortunately, while the USA has all the private computer firms and all the private industry, and under its capitalist system was doing really well in the 1980s, they had the resources. The Soviet Union does not. The Soviet Union is pretty much on the edge. And the only way it's going to be able to invest more money in weaponry and computers is by taking it out of the public sector, basically reducing healthcare, reducing the standard of living, reducing pay for workers, not investing in transport and railways, the things that ordinary people need to live and survive. So basically, in order to compete with America, which is the initial decision, the Soviet Union makes the choice to make the standards of living in the Soviet Union and the satellite states of the Warsaw Pact much, much worse. And that is going to lead to much more hostility and frustration across the Soviet Union, and eventually is going to lead to the collapse of the whole system across Europe. So, maybe that was Reagan's intention, that by trying to force the Soviet Union to compete with America, he could bring an end to the Cold War. We don't know if that was his actual plan, but it's certainly what ended up happening. So, yeah, huge consequences there. Now, I think I will do this. Yeah, I'm going to do this in two parts because I've gone on for nearly 25 minutes now. And the next section will probably take another 25 minutes, half an hour, as I look at Gorbachev. So, I might even do it in three parts. Who knows? I can be crazy like that. But anyway, I hope that's made some sense of what was going on under the America, from the American perspective, after the end of detente and the start of the Second Cold War. And next time, I'm going to look at the changing leaders and relationships in the Soviet Union and basically the end of the Cold War. Ooh. Right. I hope that's been useful, and I'll talk again pretty soon. Bye.